You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support. Guys, J-horror, when that hit our shores, was like a giant revelation for me. I was, what is this shit? I've never seen anything like this. It was genuinely scary as hell. It clearly affected everything in American horror, as a lot of the actual directors of Japanese horror came over and either did new films over here or literally just did remakes of their own films here. Like, for instance, the director Takashi Shimizu, who did the film we're going to be talking about today, Howling Village, he originally created the whole Grudge series and directed most and wrote most of them, and then ended up directing writing the first American remake. He is definitely one of the founders of the whole J-horror thing, along with Hideo Nakata, who did The Ring and Dark Water and Pulse. But when you think, when I think of J-horror, these are the two guys I really go, okay, that's them. Now flash to what, 15, 20 years later, and this guy must have entered some sort of time warp. Because he still thinks the J-horror thing is happening full blast. Nakata's off to other stuff, but this guy is like, oh man, they love my Grudge movies. They're going to love Howling Village. Here's more J-horror. And to his credit, there's been a lot of J-horror that has come out that has been truly terrible in the years since its initial birth and explosion. This feels like if this had come out in that initial round, we would have gone, hell yeah, man, Howling Village. I can't wait for the 19 sequels and probable television show and anime adaptation to follow. But nowadays, we just kind of look at it a little bit sideways and go, well, at least you know how to shoot with the camera there. Good job. I'm Chris. This is Howling Village. Joining me is Luane.
Hey, how's it going?
Ryan.
Hey, what's going on?
And Chad.
Hi.
That was adorable, Chad.
That was delightful.
So this is based like mini J-horror, loosely on a urban legend in Japan. And one thing I can tell you is Japan loves their urban legends. They've got a fucking billion of them. I mean, I can't really talk shit because here our urban legend is the last president was good at his job. There's still people who believe that's true. I mean, weird, right? But these guys are more like, if you stand alone in a bathroom stall at night, a woman with a split face will come and open a tunnel to another world. Yeah, I don't know. I'm mishing a whole bunch of things together. Howling Village actually focuses on a specific real tunnel that led, in theory, to this village that, depending on which version of the urban legend you heard, either had a madman there that would kill you if you showed up and had already killed everyone else in the village, or led to a village that was underwater and everyone there had been drowned by an evil company that had lied to the people about what, like, placement of a dam. There's a bunch of different versions of the story. I spent like an hour and a half falling down the internet, like wiki hole, just following all these different threads. But regardless, the tunnel's there. They actually shot the real entrance for the tunnel, apparently, when they did this film. They blocked it off, not because it led to some ghostly place, but because apparently some gangsters just murdered the shit out of some dude for real. Like, I mean, really, like, burned him, stabbed him, like, just, oh man. And who died in that tunnel. Like, well, we probably shouldn't let that happen again. So that's all blocked off. In this film, though, it is blocked off. We see our leads here, which is a teenage girl, Akina, played by Rinka Otani, and her boyfriend, Yuma, played by Ryota Bandu. When it starts, it kind of feels like we're watching a found footage movie, because we're seeing what they're shooting with their phones. They're, you know, going, oh, we're going to the Howling Village. Ooh. They go and they get freaked out and scary shit happens and ghosty shit happens and they take off. And the next day he's like, I don't understand what's wrong with her. She's weird and talking in like riddles, and something really, really strange. And one of the coolest shots in the whole movie happens with her sort of upside down that I don't want to say any more about, except I was like, wow, that was super fucking neato the way he shot that thing. But the upshot of this is she dies and the doctor's like, yeah, she drowned. And they're like, wait, what? How did she drown? So one by one, in a very J-horror sort of way, especially more along the line of something like Ringu or The Grudge, people around them and this family start investigating the tunnel and either disappearing into it altogether or dying in ways connected. And meanwhile, like, the main character is a nurse who is the older sister of Yuma, Kanade, played by Ayaka Miyoshi. She's a child psychiatrist. I'm sorry, I said nurse. She's a child psychiatrist. And it's clear she's come in from another horror movie entirely because she can see ghosts, something from her family line. And she's got stuff going on with a kid in her hospital with seeing ghosts. It's somewhat irrelevant. It's just there to add color to the story, really, into her character. But it's clear that she's going to be kind of the linchpin, the tying everything together character in the giant series of events that make up the plot of this film. And boy, are there a lot of them as they start to confront people from the past who are actually appearing not just as ghosts, but seemingly more physical. And although thank God they don't go to a library and look through old pieces of microfiche like people tend to in these films, they do in fact have a, we need to find out the history of this thing, but in a more interesting way than we've seen before. And then for some reason, were-dogs. I don't know why. I cannot explain the were-dogs. But up until the were-dogs, I was actually kind of happy with Howling Village. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I was pretty okay with it right up to that. And then I had this brief moment because of the representation of the what you call were-dogs. I was like, oh, is that why it's the Howling Village?
Wah, wah.
Like, I just had this thing of, like, the Howling, like, the original, because of the weird... I was just like, no, that's not okay. I quit. Whatever. No, it looks good. It sounds good. The scene you were talking about early in the film, that caught me completely off guard and I was totally in. I was like, I can't wait to see what else we're going to do. And then the rest of it is, oh, I mean, this is cool, I guess.
Yeah, the first two acts are pretty strong. And then that third act really kind of tumbles near the end. And, you know, were-dogs, it's just, we were talking about it earlier. Like, the concept is put in so late that to show it to us that late is just, it's more confusing than anything, and it kind of takes you out of the whole thing. Overall, I thought the movie was good. I thought it could have been gorier, but the deaths that they do have are pretty cool, and like, they spent a lot of time on them and they're unique. And I'm not a huge J-horror fan only because I haven't watched a lot, but I'm a fan of horror no matter what, and there are horrific things in this.
Yeah, and I just, based on what you said at the beginning, Chris, regarding this just watered down J-horror, and it's just weird that it's directed by the person, so to speak, that it's just so weird that it's directed by the person that directed it. Like, he's so influential in J-horror, and this, to me, just really felt like a carbon copy of what he'd done before. And it really is an interesting, like, urban legend, and I definitely, like, went down the rabbit hole and looked into it a little bit after watching it, too, but I just felt like it just started so strong and then just kind of went off the rails from there.
There's so much plot shit that gets crammed into the third act. And I don't want to say what one thing is, but there's a whole nother genre of film that suddenly, like, goes, oh, hello, I'm here, that suddenly enters it. And this is on top of everything else that's going on, which is a lot. That I'm like, did he think, oh, this is such a good idea, I'm definitely going to get, like, a trilogy out of this. And they're like, no, you better do it in one because we don't know. He's like, oh, fuck, okay, let's change the third act and make all three movies happen in one film, because it feels super crammed together in a way that, like, everything that happens feels like stuff that does kind of often end up happening in long-running J-horror serials.
Right.
But not in all in the same film.
What it feels like, if it weren't for the fact that we know that this director is somebody with an extended history, what it feels like is somebody who loves the work of that director who got a shot to make a movie and was like, I may never get another one. It all goes in now.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, there, and there's just some great moments, like, visually. Like, there's a really cool moment toward the end with the phone booth and, like, water rising in the phone booth. Like, there's a lot of, like, really striking imagery like that throughout. And, like, what you mentioned earlier, Chris, that the folklore behind it, it's complex, but it's also, like, the core of it is simple, and they didn't have to, like, expand it out in the way that they did.
I think a lot of the attention to detail is interesting here, and some of them are very different than what we've seen in other Japanese horror films, including the look of the ghosts and the way they move is very unique to this film.
I really dug that look.
The look reminds me a little bit of some of the stuff Lynch was doing in season 3 of Twin Peaks,
yeah,
with some of his like ghostly, what were they, repairmen? I forget what they were called. The woodsman guys. Mm-hmm. Kind of has, yeah, that smudgy time jump thing. And apparently the style of movement was based on a traditional dance, but done in a herky-jerky, slow-motion sort of style. So it really gave them an unearthly feel that we hadn't seen before. And there's lots of stuff, even stuff I don't like the things the aforementioned were-dogs. There's little bits about it that lead up to it sprinkled throughout. It's just there's no way to sell you on it. And when they eventually get to the point where they explain it, you go, yeah, but you already said this, and that made sense, and now you doing this makes no sense, and kind of goes against everything you told us before, and not in a fun, scary way or anything, just in a, did you forget that you already said that sort of way?
Well, yeah, it was weird, because tonally, up to that point where we sort of get the confirmation of what you've been calling were-dogs, it follows a weirdly anti-capitalist idea or anti-corporate idea. And I'm like, by doing that, that's okay, great. But then you throw the thing in and I'm like, well, now you make it look like the capitalists were right.
Yeah.
And that's not where you were going, because everything up to this point is these guys are bad.
And it wasn't like one of those reveals we have seen in J-Har, like in The Ring, where it's like, oh, we'll try and help the poor young girl, the ghost of the girl. Oh, no, you tried to help her? Oh, fuck, we're all dead now. I mean, that was a scary moment, because sure, they really led you to go, yeah, obviously, you know, this is a tortured spirit with a horrible past. We got to help him. Here it's like, yeah, that doesn't make any sense, and you're not doing that. So I don't know, but I will full salute to the photography. This looks fantastic. So often there's so many creative shots in here. I think it's genuinely spooky as fucking points of it, but some of it is a little silly and overly familiar. I mean, especially if you've watched a lot of this, you're like, yeah, I've seen most of these beats before. It's still, and as someone who has watched hundreds of lesser J-horror films, this is one of the better ones in many ways. It just is coming out so late and is so much a part of that earlier style. I'm kind of confused why it was made at all.
Yeah, it just feels late, like yeah, really late.
Well, let's go to final thoughts. Chad, get us started.
Like I said, I've seen some J-horror before, but I could do more to brush up on my history. Yeah, it's slick. It looks good. The beats are there. The third act is just where it kind of crumbles, and it's fine. You get over it. You're like, oh, well, that was a thing. It sucks that it didn't pay off, but it's what is this? Is this being released in theaters or video on demand?
It is a limited theatrical and okay, then on demand.
I mean, if you got nothing else going on, you know, and you really want to go out and see something, I'd check it out. But, you know, you could probably wait until you can watch it on your 60-inch at home. You'll get the same experience. Other than that, the one other thing I wanted to complain about, the end credits with the drone.
Yeah.
And knowing that was the real place is cool. But the drone was so sloppy,
yeah,
and like they just, it was almost like, because I shoot drone, and it almost looked like they just took the whole clip and then threw it there, and then they faded into another clip. Like they didn't take out selects to make it move a little bit better. And that really bugged me at the end, and maybe it bugged me more because the ending wasn't that great. But that all being said, oh, I don't know, 6.5 phone booths out of 10.
Ryan?
Yeah, I think that if you really like this genre, I feel like if you watch this on VOD, I think you will enjoy it for the most part. Like everyone else has said, I think from a production standpoint, like especially the cinematography is really, really great. There's some good performances. There's some moments that will probably really stick with you too. And for that alone, I think that, again, if you're into this genre, watch it. I think that it could have honestly been great. I really like the folklore and like the, you know, the skeleton of what that story is. But I honestly almost would like to see this kind of thing adapted again. I don't know if there's been any other sort of adaptations of this kind of story, but it really does feel like something that would have come out 10 years ago. But I'm going to give it 5 out of 10 J-horror American remakes that shouldn't have been made.
Luane?
There's not a lot to say about this. Most of it that's good is good. And the things we don't like are kind of how that third act story, the script doesn't quite work. Otherwise, it looks good. It sounds good. It's got some really interesting visual imagery. and it does some interesting creepy effects with the supernatural elements. So it's fine. I don't hate it. I think it's worth seeing. So I'd go probably 3.5 out of 5 surprise fangs.
Fangs of the memories. Memories of very old J-horror films. You know, say what you will about anything else with this film, this director, Takashi Shimizu, has a shit ton of experience. He's got 42 directed by credits on his IMDb. He's made some of the most influential horror films of all time. That, even if you're not into J-horror, it's hard to argue that the Grudge films specifically didn't have a huge effect on American and horror elsewise. And he knows how to create some pretty original ideas within horror. I mean, I remember that chick spider walking down the stairs with that like attic slow closing door sound that she makes. That haunted my nightmares for a very long time. And still, I can't rewatch those without getting like, okay, maybe if you don't look directly at the screen when she looks up at you, you won't be cursed. Man, the Japanese people are really into curses too. I was walking down the street in Tokyo. I'm not making this up. I literally was walking down the street in Tokyo. And in the middle of their Wall Street, there's this little sectioned off place with like a grave, and all these people who walk into it and then turn around backwards and place like incense by the grave and never look at it. And I was my friend. I was like, what the fuck is that? It's like, ah, that's the head of the samurai. There's this whole story. And it's like, yeah, you can't look directly at the grave or the head will follow you around and curse you and all your descendants. So you'll see people like honor, but they won't look at the grave. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? This is Wall Street. Damn. Anyway, the point being is the old and the new still coalesce in Japan. And that's kind of cool. And Howling Village is definitely an extension of that in many ways. And it is just sort of an amalgam of a bunch of different urban legends. And urban legend stuff is cool, but I can't help but imagine if I was Japanese and lived in Japan and was super familiar with this legend, of which it is one of the most famous ones there, I would probably find this considerably more scary than I do here as an American, where some of it just seems a little absurd. But it's shot so well. There's so many neat ideas in the midst of the murkiness and the chaos that I got to recommend this, especially to people who do like J-horror. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on here. It just may not work for your typical viewer of Western horror so much. I'm going to give this 7 out of 10 Japanese ghosts that actually know how to brush their hair out of their face. Thank you for that. Jesus Christ, are there no combs in the afterlife?